this has the opportunity for the greatest turnaround in college football exists here today, and it's not one to be taken lightly.
Welcome to Bring On the Podcast. Here's your host, Luke Thompson.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Bring On the Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Luke Thompson, and I'd like to welcome Wildcat 00 making her podcast debut today. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
And we've also got Melissa Treeblosser from Frogs of War. And, you know, you do the podcast over there. Have you ever thought about, we just, you know, renamed ours Bring On the Podcast. Have you ever thought about making yours Frogcats?
Oh, Frogcast? Wow. That's a strong play. I don't know, though. I mean, I feel like that's a little too close to cats. And, you know, since it's K-State Hate Week, which is also known as teams that we don't really hate, so we try to manufacture a reason to be angry week. So it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're here to talk about. TCU, Kansas State playing in championship weekends. I think that makes it a championship, right?
You know, this is as close to it. Well, you know, winner gets Texas A&M. So in a way, I think it is probably a championship competition.
Oh, man, you know, honestly, that almost makes me want to see TCU win just so you get right. That Kenny Hill rematch.
Right? Wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, man. Well, speaking of Kenny Hill, what's up with the TCU offense this year?
You know, it depends. It depends on not only the week and the matchup, but kind of the snap. This offense has been frustratingly inconsistent all year long. Kenny Hill has kind of been everything that we thought Kenny Hill would be, and that we don't know what he's going to be from a minute-to-minute basis. He has flashes of incredible talent, does incredible things, and then disappears. And I think we saw that Thursday against Texas, too. You know, it took a while for the offense to get rolling. They had 22 yards rushing in the first half, turned the corner at halftime. Third quarter, moving the ball a little bit, and then, you know, Hill gets hurt, comes out. They turn it over to Foster Schler in the run game, and all of a sudden, Frogs have racked up 300 yards on the ground and, you know, run away from the Longhorns late. So this offense is talented. It's been inconsistent. The offensive line has been very inconsistent. There have been a lot of injuries at important spots, which certainly hasn't helped things. And the play calling has been very, very questionable at times, and I think that's probably been the most frustrating part for the fans is that we feel like they've kind of asked Kenny Hill to be somebody he's not, and that's really hurt TCU, especially at home.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't know anything about frustration with play calling, right, Double Girl?
You could be talking about K-State right there.
Yeah.
Well, and the passing games look about the same most weeks, you know, so it's going to be a really interesting matchup. I'm really excited to see, you know, what Kansas State's or pass defense is able to do against Kenny Hill, who by all reports is expected to be back starting on Saturday morning. But the running game has really taken off here the last couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting kind of to see that strength versus strength matchup.
Yeah. Well, K-State's pass defense always starts with the pass rush, because if you've got a quarterback who can throw and he gets time to sit in the pocket, he's going to pick the secondary apart. That's what we've seen this season.
Well, and the interesting part there, too, is that when the TCU offense has been at its very best has been when they've had design runs for Kenny Hill, or he's done that 1-2-3 break free, you know, out of the pocket and run. And, you know, we had a 40-something yard run on one leg against Texas on Thursday, and that's where, obviously, any defense breaks down. If you have a quarterback that can use his legs effectively, it's a lot harder to defend. And when Kenny Hill actually chooses to use that part of his ability, that's when the TCU offense is at its very best.
Yeah. And you've had one of those years that's kind of been like, you know, we've seen K-State teams, I think 2011 comes to mind, where, you know, you lost to Arkansas in overtime, barely lost to Oklahoma, lost in double overtime tag. What a close one versus Kansas, despite giving them every opportunity to win.
Which is every year we play Kansas. So that's nothing to be worried about.
That's true. But, I mean, is there something about this team that they struggle in close games, or have they just been unlucky?
Well, I don't even know that it's unlucky. I think really what it comes down to is that this is a very young team. And it was a really young team last year. It was one of the youngest teams in the country. But what we all thought is, hey, all these freshmen are getting snaps. They're playing a lot of reps. You know, they should come back, even though they'll still only be sophomores and juniors, and be really, really good in 2016. Well, we should have listened to Gary, which should be probably my just life motto, is I should listen more to Gary. Because he warned us in August, hey, this team's still really young. Yeah, they got a lot of experience last year, but don't expect them to be world beaters on the defensive side of the ball. And what we've watched happen here over the last couple of weeks is we've seen that young team, especially on the defensive side, really grow up. Luck, you know, obviously that plays into it a lot, especially on the injury front. But what's happened is this team is learning how to win. And despite the setback against Texas Tech, which was just the weirdest thinking game I've ever seen. I mean, if you're only putting up 17 points against the worst defense in the country, like, something's wrong. And that's always scored in regulation. But I think that they just had to figure out how to win. And I don't know that there's a real established locker room leader that was the guy that's, when it's fourth quarter, the chips are on the line, is wanting to get up in people's faces. But I think that's developed over the course of the last month. And we've seen this team mature into a team that can win. They just don't always put it together at the right time to finish the job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, was the morale hurt, you think, like, by the Arkansas loss or by the close Oklahoma loss? Were they bounce back from that?
Arkansas was an absolute stomach punch loss. It felt like everything was there. It felt like the opportunities were there. Turpin completely flipped that game on its heels two or three times. And when we scored with about a minute left and then got that penalty on the throat slash last Rising Kings, whatever you want to call it, that, you know, then sportsmanlike by Hill, I think it just took a lot of the wind out of the sails. You know, Oklahoma was a different kind of game. We started out so fast and built such a big lead and then completely fell apart for two quarters. And that team really clawed their way back into contention. And so that wasn't as much of a morale defeater as it was kind of a beacon of, okay, this team can play with anybody when they're, you know, clicking on all cylinders. Well, it was the last time we clicked on all cylinders for a while until the Baylor game. So they just, they have all the hallmarks of a team that is playing a lot of guys that are still figuring out how to play, you know, big time college football, and a lot of guys that were really highly rated coming out of high school that needed to learn, like a lot of young, talented players do, you know, what it means to actually work and compete at this level. And the difference between, you know, having a bunch of highly rated 3 and 4 stars at a school like TCU and a bunch of highly rated 3 and 4 stars at an Oklahoma or a Texas or an Ohio State or anywhere else is that you don't have the competition. You don't have the older guys, you know, that can really push them at this point. And so you're trying to play the most talented players, even when the most talented players aren't necessarily ready to play. And I think that's why you've seen this TCU defense completely turn around over the course of the last 5 weeks or so, as Anthony Tejada has gotten healthy, as Julius Lewis has gotten back into the lineup. And some of those younger guys have kind of figured it out and seen it starting to click. And that's why I think the performance has been so great on that side of the ball. The offense, I can't really tell you the reason other than just Kenny Hill has been erratic, the offensive line has been erratic, the play calling has been erratic. And so we just haven't seen them kind of develop an identity and stick with it.
Yeah. Well, if you really like K-State, you would have a really good running back that you only give 5 to 10 carries a game to, right?
Yeah, we did that for a while. That's really fun. That's been the Kyle, we could call that also the Kyle Hicks story. So I feel your frustration there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Devil Zero, what are your thoughts on Alex Barnes and the Mr.
Well, he can obviously play, so I'm not sure why he didn't see the field other than a sort of misplaced sense of loyalty to Charles Jones. But I think we're going to see more of him, and I got a pretty good glimpse of how tough he is after the hit he took against KU.
He took.
Yeah, he's a tough guy, and he's a young guy, and he seems really enthusiastic, so I'm all in on Barnes.
Yeah, and that touchdown that he had, that was a pretty spectacular play to get in the
end zone.
Real quick, you did mention Arkansas, so I want to take this moment to point out that my alma mater, Mizzou, came back from a 3-touchdown deficit to beat Arkansas over the weekend.
I really thought at the beginning of the season, in my misguided forgetfulness of what college football really is, that would be a good double overtime loss for us by the end of the year. But it turns out, like most everybody else this year, Arkansas is also trash. No offense to Mizzou. But
it's okay.
We all three of us know that Mizzou is kind of trash.
Yeah.
It's like TCU is kind of trash, and everybody is kind of trash except for Alabama. So this college football season has just been weird. It has just been one of the weirdest I can remember in my, you know, college football fandom history.
But, you know, Mizzou really needed a win, just the whole athletic department.
I mean,
they did get – they had an individual national champion in women's cross country, but no one noticed.
I'm shocked.
It's still pretty impressive, though.
I feel like you guys should have a special podcast just commemorating that event.
Yeah. We'll have to work on that.
Bring on the podcast.
That's four national championships.
So, I mean, you talk about Kenny Hill, you know, his up and down. You know, how much of that can you put on his receivers, if any of it?
Well, you know, TCU has at one point was leading the country in drops. I don't know if that's still true. I sure would love to hold on to that, victory this year. But, it's been really interesting. You know, I think that as college football fans, you get to a point where you're starting to see your program have some success and you kind of feel like, oh, we're now in reload, not rebuild mode. And you forget just what it's like to have a transcendent player. And the fact that we had two very transcendent players at the same time is almost unheard of in Josh Doctson and Trayvon Boykin. And losing Doctson is just such an issue in the fact that that guy didn't have a catch radius because it was the entirety of the football stadium. If you put it, you know, anywhere within 30 feet of him, it felt like he was going to find a way to come down with the ball. And not only did that bail out Trayvon Boykin a lot, but it bailed out the play callers too. Because at the end of the day, if you got in a third and long or second long situation, you needed 7 or 8 yards. There were a lot of options to get those if you were throwing to number 9. We don't have that guy this year. And the good and the bad of this is we don't have that one guy that you have to stop. The good part of that is obviously you can't key on one wide receiver and cause your quarterback to, you know, have some problems. The bad news is that we don't know who's the guy we can count on a week-to-week basis and a play-to-play basis either. You know, Taj Williams is uber talented. JUCO transfer is one of the top, depending on which recruiting site you follow, one of the top 3 wide receivers in the country coming out of the JUCO ranks. Tons of young talent. John D'Arce has been a real revelation as a transfer from LSU. But, you know, with Turpin being hurt on and off, with Dez White being the smallest guy you're ever going to see on a Division I football field, we just haven't found those guys that can consistently make plays at that position. And that hasn't done Kenny Hill a lot of favors. Yeah. You know, I think he's equally culpable in some of the problems that we've had. But at the end of the day, you expect wide receivers that are that talented and with that much depth to make plays. And these guys just aren't doing it on a consistent enough basis. So I think it's going to be super important on Saturday that TCU establishes the run early, because we do have a ton of guys we can throw out there. We can give you a lot of looks. They can play different positions, inside, outside. Tons of speed, just insane amount of speeds at that position group. But they haven't proven they can consistently make that big play, especially in a third and long situation. So TCU can't get behind the chains early and expect to have a lot of success against a pretty good Kansas State defense.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel your pain missing your stud wide receiver. I think 2 years later, Kansas State is still missing Tyler Lockett.
Oh, yes. But hasn't he been so much fun to watch in Seattle?
Oh, yeah, he really
has.
Man,
that kid has been unbelievable.
Yeah. I think Pete Carroll looks like such a genius for moving up to make that pick. But yeah, double zero. I mean, who would you say is K-State's go-to receiver at this point? There's probably at least a couple guys.
I was really surprised to see Deontay Burton come along as he did. He's a senior now, so obviously that's not going to have much more of an impact. But I've been kind of surprised at how good he's been, and I think Pringle is good, and I think Heath is good. I don't know that any of them are Tyler Lockett. Yeah. They're not even Aaron Lockett. I think that's the problem. So.
Yeah, I mean, Pringle's got the look, and every once in a while he'll make a play, but it doesn't have that consistency that you want. And I think
I'm more concerned that they haven't come along in the return game either. I mean, I think we're missing that fast guy who can really change the game on the punt and kickoff returns. So,
which is really weird for a Kansas State team.
I know. Our special teams have been very unspecial this year.
Yeah.
We can relate. We lost to Texas Tech because of 2 missed short field goals and lost to Arkansas because of a blocked extra point or blocked short field goal. So I know how that story goes, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the thing you miss about Lockett the most is just the little things he did. You know, he could outrun people if he needed to or make a juke, but he would just embarrass defensive backs with his route running on a regular basis, just the way he was able to cut. So, really miss that a lot.
I'm excited to see if Burton and Tejada end up matching up quite a bit Saturday morning, because Tejada, you know, who was such a revelation as a freshman, really struggled coming back from a pretty devastating knee injury, but is rounding back into form now. And I think if they end up matched up a little bit on the edge, that could be a lot of fun for fans to watch.
For sure. As long as K-State's got a quarterback who can get it to him. I mean, especially since Ertz has gotten hurt, there's not really anybody that can especially make him the deep throw.
Yeah, well, and that's really, you know, has always been, it feels like TCU's Achilles heel, and that's why the matchup with Kansas State is always so intriguing, is that, you know, if you aren't going to take the top off the defense, which you know, Wildcats haven't shown they can consistently do this year, then all of a sudden TCU can put an extra guy in the box or be a lot more aggressive on the blitz packages. And when Denzel Johnson and the corners have the ability to blitz, that's when the TCU defense is absolutely deadly. And they were able to do that with some success against Texas, which really threw off Shane Buechele and kind of took a lot of the steam out of the offense.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you know, when you face Kansas State, even when the quarterback's got a hurt shoulder and you got an outstanding running back, you're going to see a lot of quarterback runs. So how does TCU handle that?
It's a very different kind of quarterback run than, you know, what we saw against some of these speedier guys. You know, but I think...
Well, until we put Delton in there.
Yeah. Well, I think we see the TCU defense kind of improve on that too. Austin Allen from Arkansas absolutely shredded the Frogs on the ground, and that was a big reason that they won. We did a pretty decent job against the run game, but he was super accurate as a passer, which is not really his MO, and then was really effective as a runner, and TCU just got absolutely torched. But as we've seen them kind of maintain their gap integrity, we've seen our young linebackers grow up a lot and play a lot better football. They've been able to corral some of these running quarterbacks and limit their effectiveness. And I think the key for Saturday is going to be, you know, you're going to pick up some quarterback yardage, you know, whether it's Ertz or, who's the other guy we're going to see back there?
Maybe Alex Ellum, maybe Joe Huebner.
Okay, yeah. Huebner is the Perry Ellis of college football. That guy has been here forever. I think if we can, you know, we're going to give up some yardage. Those guys are going to break it. As long as we can keep them from breaking big plays on third down and converting first downs, I think that we'll be all right. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how does TCU tackle? Because that's always the key, you know, in stopping a quarterback run. It's when they break contain and they get to that second level of the defense where you see your defense really collapse. And so the tackling has improved dramatically since September, but it's still not championship level tackling, clearly, as we look at sitting at, you know, 6-5 or whatever we are this year. So I think that that's obviously the key. But also when you don't have the threat of, you know, them throwing consistently hitting 40-yard bombs over the top of you, you can be a little bit more aggressive against the run game, even when it is coming from the quarterback position.
Yeah. Well, speaking of tackling, one thing, I haven't watched a whole lot of TCU this year, but one thing that really jumps out in the stats is TCU's got three of the Big 12's four leading tacklers. So is that just the defenses are always on the field, or is it that nobody else makes tackles?
You know, it's a little bit of both. And a lot of it is just the way that the system is run. If you look over the past several years, TCU linebackers have been, you know, 100-yard tacklers and consistently been near the top of the league that doesn't play defense anyways when it comes to stats. And so I'm assuming, and I haven't checked it, but I'm assuming it's Ty Summers and Traven Howard, and I don't know who the third guy would be. Maybe Denzel Johnson.
Yep.
Oh, that's pretty good off the top of my head, isn't
nice
it?
Work.
That's pretty impressive.
That might have even been the right order.
Yeah, I think, you know, I bet it is. You know, Ty Summers is this converted quarterback, high school quarterback who showed up to TCU redshirted. They added like 30 pounds to his frame and turned him into a linebacker. And he is not fast, but he is smart, and he wraps up really well. And he's a big dude in the middle of that defense. And so he really does wreak a lot of havoc. He seems to always be near the ball. He's just a really, really effective guy in the middle, just a really smart player. Traven Howard is a ridiculous athlete. He's a 200-pound guy that's supposed to be a safety who, you know, came in the great linebacker injury plague of 2015 and really made a name for himself nationwide as a great linebacker in the conference. And he's more of a coverage guy. He can pick up a wide receiver. He can cover a running back. He can tackle a speedy quarterback on an option play. And so he's been just super effective for the past two seasons. And then Denzel Johnson is kind of our wild card. You do not want to see that guy in coverage, especially deep. He is not the greatest on the outside, but when he's freed up to be more of a tackler, more of a run defender and a blitzer as a cornerback, he is super, super deadly. And so I think it's Kansas State in that sense is a really, really great matchup for this TCU defense, and that you can have Summers on the field, whereas with some of these smaller spread teams, he doesn't get a lot of snaps. You can have Traven Howard just kind of, you know, running around like his hair's on fire making plays, and then Denzel Johnson is going to be freed up to be more of a run help kind of a guy and more of a blitzer, which I think really plays into his hand and his strengths.
I don't know. It was the Kansas State offense last week was sort of disappointing. It's hard to pin down exactly what was going on. It just seemed like it was a bunch of different little things. I mean, I don't know. What'd you think of the way they played on Saturday, 0-0?
You know, I thought that at some point in the third quarter, maybe because of the injury to Ertz, they sort of lost focus, and then it was just a really unusual and very confusing series of events that happened after that. And I've seen this happen a couple of times this season where they build up kind of a decent enough lead that they think they can sit on it, and then everybody on the team just loses focus and nothing gets done. And I don't know how to explain that other than that, you know, they're trying to avoid injuries to Ertz, and I guess Huebner came out of this game hurt as well. So, and I don't know what the ceiling is on Alex Delton's abilities, but it wasn't clear to me that he could actually pass any better than I can. So,
yeah. I don't know. The thing with Delton, I don't know. Maybe he just can't pass. Like, we should probably just trust the coaches on that, but they don't really give him a chance. Is what it's
yeah,
like.
I mean, we've got no evidence because they've never let him really throw the ball. So
are you telling me that once again Kansas State had quarterbacks go down to injury?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what are you guys putting in the water up there? Like, does Bill Snyder really hate quarterbacks? I mean, I've heard that rumor before, so it wouldn't surprise me, but
I mean,
man.
Part of it is when you run the quarterback 20 times a game, it's kind of bound to happen at some point.
True.
I think the problem
well,
is
quarterback's 45 years old.
Yeah.
I think the problem is everybody cannot be Colin Klein, and the coaches for some reason think that everyone should be.
Like, even Colin Klein was getting pretty banged up by the end of the season.
Yeah.
And he's a freaking tank. So, I don't know. What are you going to do?
I did not miss seeing that guy on the other sideline, I'm going to be honest. He was a PC beer.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's going to be the coach in about 10 years, maybe 5.
Oh, I believe it. I would like him to be the coach in about 3 years when Bill Snyder finally hangs it up, maybe for actual this time, because, you know, the only job that scares me when people talk about Patterson leaving is Kansas State. Okay. I really believe that's the only job he would ever leave for.
Interesting.
I don't think there's any danger of that anymore. I mean,
it's, you know, it comes up every year, and every time there's an opening, Gary Patterson's name is always on the list. Like, apparently Oregon reached out to him this year. At Hell Freak, which they still haven't done, but maybe they will by the time this airs. But it's always interesting, and whenever he talks about Kansas State, and whenever he talks about the legacy up there, and coaching in that atmosphere and that environment, and with that kind of, it's a different world. The media is not, you know, jumping out as much. The fans are a little bit, you know, a little bit kinder, and there's that homecoming element. I really think that is the only place that he'd seriously leaving for. I don't know that he will. But that threat is always good. Whatever Bill Snyder does eventually decide to retire in 30 years, that would be the one time where I'd actually be nervous about Gary Patterson.
Do you think it makes a difference to Patterson that Jerry Kill is now at Kansas State too? Aren't they like BFFs or something?
They are. I've forgotten that he was there. I mean, and I could see that reunion being something special as well. I mean, they were, you know, Patterson as well. It was in Patterson's wedding, and he hated playing against him. I mean, just absolutely hated it when we played Minnesota in the home and home last 2 years. So I think that could play a factor. But I also think Kelsey Patterson is going to have a lot of say in that, and Kelsey Patterson lives and breathes Fort Worth, and I don't know that she's really into, like, very, very environment, so Manhattan might not be the right spot for her. Unless you have a lot of dog shelters, that I could see her wanting to go and run those, because she does amazing work now with the SPCA here in Fort Worth. Legitimately, that woman like saves more lives of dogs than anybody I've ever met.
I mean, K-State's got a pretty good veterinary school.
So. True. See, there you go.
maybe.
Oh man, can we feel better about things, guys?
But Snyder's probably gonna stick around for a while. And by the way, you know.
Yeah.
You probably heard that he got his 200th win on Saturday. We are obligated to mention that on the podcast.
Absolutely. And we are all very happy for him. TCU's had a fondness for fellow Purple people, I think, since we entered the Big 12. And ever since Bill Snyder wrote that really, really sweet note to Trayvon Boykin, we've all kind of loved Bill just a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Though he scares the crap out of me because he is a wizard.
Yeah. And, of course, in classic Bill Snyder fashion, I don't know if you saw this after the game, the first thing he said was, well, yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm not in a very good mood because we played terrible today. Or something like that, you know. Typical Snyder. And then Joe Posnanski.
he is the greatest. Yeah.
Joe Posnanski wrote a great piece today. You know, kind of talking about the rebuilding and stuff, but he said, you know, based on his conversation, that Bill Snyder is probably celebrating his 200th win by watching TCU tape until the wee hours of the morning.
Yep. I actually read that article this morning on Twitter, and it did not surprise me whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's why there's such a mutual respect too between TCU and Kansas State, is that I think we all believe that Gary Patterson's like life goal is not to be Nick Saban, it's to be Bill Snyder. And I don't think he'll coach as long as Snyder is see him on the sideline in his 80s. I don't think that's what he, I don't think he wants to die on the sidelines, you know, and not mm-hmm. God forbid that that ever happened to Bill, obviously, but you know, I can't see Snyder retiring until he absolutely has to. And I see Gary mm-hmm. kind of walking away while he still has good years left, because there's just a lot of other things he wants to do with his life. But that's who Gary Patterson is, you know, that kind of guy who really values players.
What are Gary's chances in Fort Worth of getting a statue and a highway and a stadium named after him?
Oh, he already has a statue. You didn't know that?
Okay, I didn't know
that. They legitimately put in a statue last year, and he was angry about it. He did not want one before he retired, and he was very clear about that. But there was a donor who was very old and very, very ill, and one of his dying requests was that the statue be built before he was too sick to appreciate it. And so they put in a statue last year, dedicated it. It's him and Dutch Meyer and Samuel O'Brien out in our little hall. It will absolutely be Gary Patterson Field at Amy G. Carter Stadium when he walks away. He will have roads and buildings and everything named after him. I mean, I think his legacy doesn't need anything to be completed, but I do think that he doesn't want to leave until he wins a national championship at TCU. And that's the final piece that the fans will be perfectly content if he sticks around another 5-10 years, walks away having been at TCU for 20-25 years, won a couple of Big 12 conference championships, won the Rose Bowl, the Peach Bowl. This team easily has 2 or 3 big bowl wins in them, you know, in the next 5 to 6 years. I really believe that with the talent that we're bringing in. It's going to be a matter of what he's willing to have his name on, because a lot of people think he's a showman and they think his histrionics on the sideline or draw attention to himself. But at the end of the day, like, Gary Patterson doesn't want it to be about him. He brought up, and I'm sure this is much in the same vein of Bill Snyder yesterday, is he brought up that last year, 2 years ago, when he coached his 200th game, and they made a big deal of that, that he was upset, and he still thinks about that, and he still regrets it, because he felt like it put too much of the onus on him and not on his team, and it took away from the special season, because that game was more about him than it was about them. It's just the guy that he is. And that's why I do think that he is a lot like Bill Snyder, or that's kind of the guy that he models himself after. And he cares about graduation. He cares about the players once they leave. He cares about their families. You know, he wants them to succeed, not just in football, but in life. And I don't think he's going to make a Butch Jones champion thing, but I do think that that's really what he's about as a person.
Yeah. And so
there just aren't a lot of those guys left.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, you talked about, just curious, you know, our commentary, especially recently, it seems like there's a lot of grumbling. You know, you get half the people saying, oh, Bill Snyder's too old for this, it's time to get some fresh blood in there, and then you'll have somebody saying, oh, no, he deserves to do whatever he wants, you know, he's Bill Snyder. And I think there's some validity in both cases, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do you get some of those debates on your side as well?
Interesting this year, because for the first time in a long time, there are people starting to say that Gary Patterson hasn't done a good job. And I will say that those people are idiots, and that most of them probably are either newly associated with TCU football or did not attend TCU and are just kind of jumping on the bandwagon late. Just for the sake of doing it. But like I said, it's the first time that, you know, I've been around TCU football now for, you know, almost 2 decades. So I feel pretty intimately connected to this program. And I think that we're just starting to hear those grumblings. Ultimately, I don't think there is a single real person who knows anything about this program, who's followed it for any length of time, that wants Gary Patterson to do anything but stick around and do and just, you know, keep doing what he's doing. We've definitely seen him turn more over to his coordinators, which has been interesting, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I do think that people rightfully have asked the question of, does he need to make some changes on the defensive staff? I think that a lot of those problems have corrected themselves over the last month, and so there's not as much a call for their heads as there were. But the thing that we've seen Patterson really grow and do is that he's been a lot more willing to adjust than he ever was, you know, even just 3 or 4 years ago, and kind of look at the landscape of college football as a whole, look at what his program needs to do to win, and be more willing to step back in some of those areas or change some philosophies in order to give his team the best chance to succeed. And I think that's really paid dividends and has kind of set TCU up for a chance to be, you know, contenders for a really long time.
Yeah, again, that sounds all very, very familiar to Kansas State fans. I mean, Bill Snyder, one of the, I think, valid criticisms is that he has extreme loyalty to his coordinators. Mm-hmm. He's never going to fire anybody. Is Patterson kind of the same way?
Oh, 100%. All you have to do is look at the offensive side of the ball. And when he brought in Sonny Kumpy and Doug Meacham, what a lot of people don't know is that the two reigning offensive coordinators, Rusty Burns and Jared Anderson, were not let go. And they were not given pay cuts. They were just reassigned. And like I said, some TCU fans have complained about that. But ultimately, Patterson wants to do right by his assistants. And I think that's one of the things that we saw in the Charlie Strong drama that a lot of people don't pay attention to. When a head coach loses their job or an assistant loses their job, they're in a lot different spot. Because the head coach can lose their job, and Charlie Strong is going to make $10 million the next 2 years no matter what. And he made $5 million a year for the last three, and so he's fine. But there are, you know, 50 other people on his staff that might have a lot harder time getting a job that maybe were only making $85,000 or $100,000, which is still great money that most of us would be more than happy to make. But, you know, if you have a family and you've put down roots and your kids are in school, it becomes a much different situation. And Patterson is loyal almost to a fault in that sense as well. He loves to give his coordinators opportunities to go succeed. He loves seeing them get big jobs. The amount of pride he's taken in Justin Fuente, you know, playing for an ACC championship next weekend, a former offensive coordinator at TCU. Like, it's really cool when he sees those guys go off to the next thing and succeed. But by the same token, he doesn't ever want to get rid of anybody. Yeah. And I think even with some of the struggles this year, you'll be hard-pressed to see him make any real changes on the staff unless those guys choose to leave of their own volition.
Yeah. Well, now you just need an offensive coordinator who gives the ball to his son inside the five every time.
And thankfully, we do not have a lot of nepotism on the staff. That is the one thing I am very happy about, because that is a real – that can be a real source of complaint, I'm sure, for you guys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's really about nepotism, though. I think in those goal line situations, he's been really good with Tim Dimmel. So, you know, even if his father wasn't the coordinator, they'd probably call his name.
That's a fair point. It's not like the Chiefs inside the red zone or something. Or Golden Gate situations.
Oh, man.
But anyway, I mean, you did mention Charlie Strong. So what was it like watching the Texas sideline in that game when everyone knew Charlie Strong was a dead man walking?
I actually went down to Austin for the game. I went down there, you know, did the Friday morning drive down and the Friday night drive back, which was a much more pleasurable drive back than after a loss. it was a very interesting environment at the stadium. The students were non-existent, which I know it was Thanksgiving break, and I know that, you know, not every student that goes to Texas lives in Austin, but having watched the way that the A&M crowd showed out for a Thursday night game against LSU when their team has kind of tanked lately, that was a little bit disappointing. To see the student section basically empty. I mean, the band had to completely spread out to make it look like there were people in the stands. So it was an interesting atmosphere when it was close in the first half. There, you know, both fan bases were kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. But I think Texas was on the verge of, you know, kind of lighten up if they'd been able to really do anything on offense. But as the game started to turn, and when Darius Anderson broke a 70-yard touchdown late in the fourth quarter that pretty much sealed it, you really just kind of felt all the air go out of the sideline or go out of the stadium, and you saw the dejected looks on the Texas players. And there was a real sense, like, I listened to a lot of the coverage on my way home after the game, and it was really, really sad, because I do think that those players loved Charlie and respected him as a coach and really liked the values that he brought to the program. And so it almost felt like they, not only had they lost the game, but they felt like they had let him down in that way that, you know, when you get in trouble with your parents and they give you that look and you feel the worst you've ever felt in your life. Like, that was kind of the feeling that you got listening to the players talk about Charlie Strong and talk about that last game. Texas mishandled that because they're Texas and they don't know how to do anything right.
From the very beginning. I mean, we talked about it last week with John Kurtz, and Texas never gave Charlie Strong a chance.
No, they were. I mean, the minute they hired him, they had boosters coming out and saying he's not cut out for the job, and so it wasn't really fair to him at all, obviously. Yeah. But it was unfortunate for those players. You know, with how quickly things happened on Saturday, it was obvious that Tom Sherman had been, you know, part of the discussion for much, much longer than those couple of hours, and you almost got the feeling that a good portion of the fan base, as well as pretty much all the power brokers at the University of Texas, were rooting against Charlie on Friday and hoping that they would lose to TCU, that they had the excuse they wanted.
You know, I saw on Twitter, I think it was Max Olson of ESPN, said he did an informal poll of just 100 random people outside the stadium, and like 80% said they wanted Strong to stay. So if that's truly representative of the fan base, I think that's a credit to them. I don't know, they would have said the same thing afterwards, but...
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic. And, you know, one of the, it was interesting because the group of friends that I went down with, one of them is a Louisville fan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Charlie did Louisville wrong on his way out of town. You know, the same kind of thing that Tom Herman did and every other coach that leaves for bigger program does on their way out the door. Hey, guys, I'm never leaving. Don't worry. You got nothing to worry about. I'm not going anywhere. The next day as they're you know, leaving the stadium, see ya. Yeah. Thanks for everything, guys. I'll write you a nice letter in the paper. Don't worry. And so he was, you know, he was pretty happy. And he, you know, kind of, he was kind of making the joke of, like, this is what he kind of gets. This is what he deserves. And, the fans, you know, when he was kind of talking a little bit of smack at the end of it, were like, oh, have a little class. You know, we love Charlie, and trying to defend him. And, you know, then my friend would say, hey, let me tell you the reason why I'm saying this. And they'd come around a little bit. But at the end of the day, and it's always kind of that philosophy of put your money where your mouth is. At the end of the day, if you really wanted that coach to stick around, show up to the games, stay at the games, be vocal, be supportive. You know, actually invest in the program in a way that I don't feel the Texas fans have done consistently this year. You're the players. You have more talent than anybody you line up against in the Big 12 Conference, except for maybe Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So losing to Kansas is inexcusable. If you are truly trying to save your coach's job, like, could you show a little bit more heart, maybe?
Yeah.
And I don't want to put it on the kids, because at the end of the day, they're 18, 22-year-old kids. And the, obviously all these distractions were a lot to do, but it's really easy to talk about how much you care about a coach as a fan or as a player, as a booster or whatever else. But when push comes to shove, they only gave the guy 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really easy for Tom Herman to come in year four and win a lot of games because the talent's there, the system's in place, the locker room accountability is in place. And I don't think you're going to hear a lot about Charlie Strong if Herman comes in next year and does that.
Yeah, I thought a good analogy, somebody said, it's like the Ron Zook situation. They got rid of him, and Urban Meyer took everything that Ron Zook had built. And, you know, so they had a good team. But nobody ever credits Ron Zook for that. It's all
And then how long did it take for Urban Meyer's act to run thin there and him to, you know, things to get hard and him to quit? So I hope all the Ohio State fans remember that now, because what's Ohio State in year four of Meyer?
Yeah,
we'll see when things start to get to turn, or, you know, the sanctions eventually come, as they always seem to do around the Urban Meyer program. So, I think this all comes full circle for both of us as fans of our respective schools, is that there are not a lot of Bill Snyders and Gary Pattersons left in college football anymore. There are a lot of mercenary coaches. And it's easy when you have a down season, you get frustrated to think of, you know, start looking to the grass is greener. But at the end of the day, Houston fans truly thought they had their next Gary Patterson. They really thought Tom Herman would stick around and try to build something there, because everything he said was to that degree.
Yeah.
But the minute those bright lights and those paychecks and those dollar signs started coming towards him, he turned and bailed. And Patterson has had countless opportunities to do the same thing. Texas has called him at least twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure Bill Snyder in the past has had plenty of opportunities as well. Mm-hmm. But they stick around because they're invested and they love the program and they love the school and they really care about the fans and the players. And there's just not a lot of guys in the country that are going to do that anymore.
I thought that the best response I've heard for the Houston thing was one of my friends who went to school there said, he's like, in the words of A Tribe Called Quest, thank you for your service. We'll take it from here.
That's great. Yeah, like, I hate to say it, but I've kind of enjoyed watching the meltdown on Twitter from the Houston fans, though, the way that they talked earlier the season about the Big 12 not letting them in. They were very angry at TCU because apparently it was only TCU's fault that the Big 12 wasn't expanding. Suckers.
Yeah. Speaking of programs that collapsed this season, I know I think everybody in college football outside of Waco has enjoyed what's happened to Baylor, but it must be especially nice for you as a TCU fan.
I mean, it's a bittersweet. I really enjoy their lack of success. I enjoy seeing them lose, and the more idiocy that we've seen from their fan base selling their cab shirts and trying to defend that horrible excuse for a human being, the more I've enjoyed just seeing them get their faces smashed in every week on the football field. But I also know that those two things are not mutually exclusive, or should be mutually exclusive, maybe. I'm glad that they're not good. I just wish that it had been in a more organic way than the way that happened, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, Baylor, I hate Baylor with every fiber of my being. Of course I do. I'm TCU. But I also know that there are a lot of great people that go to that university. There's a lot of great professors, beautiful facilities. But the minority tends to scream the loudest. And those defending Art Briles are a very, very loud minority.
Yeah.
And until they shut up and stop talking, I'm going to you know, take a lot of pleasure in watching them just absolutely fail on the field. Because the way that they've spoken of what's happened on that campus and Art Briles and the way the assistant coaches and their families have handled themselves has been so disgusting that I feel there's a little bit of karmic retribution in the fact that their football team has completely and totally fallen apart and given up on the season. So in that sense, yeah, you know, suck it, Baylor. And I think, you know, them being down to one recruit left in the 2017 class is a little bit of justice as well. So I hope that they clean things up. I hope they get rid of everybody that could have potentially been in any way involved in that horrible situation and the cover-up of multiple sexual assaults. But then I hope that they get back to being competent but not good. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to have great success, but I want them to at least be a little bit more of a challenge than SMU for us on the schedule every year so that the rivalry has a little bit of joy, because there was very little satisfaction in whooping them this year other than the fact that we whooped them. But immediately after the game, it went back to feeling like just kind of dirty, you know?
Yeah. And I know, like, kind of like you mentioned, there are some people you feel bad for, and especially a kid like Seth Russell, who, you know, by every indication, did all the right things, you know, or kind of just to see his career end like that is kind of a shame. But
I was very sorry to see him go out injured. I will say that I felt that Seth Russell did a little too much defending of Art Briles for my taste.
Okay.
Before he stopped talking about it, which was finally a good move. But I don't think he's a bad kid at all. I think he's a really, really great person, and it was absolutely devastating to see his career end like that. And the way that the Baylor football training staff handled his injuries over the last couple of years were really, really questionable, in my opinion. And so I felt like they put him in some bad situations as well, and I just think it's unfair for him because not his college career over, but you know, there's a really good shot that he might not be able to play football again. And I think it's just really, really sad for any great player to have to be taken off the field as opposed to getting to walk off it, you know?
Yeah. Well, 00, I mean, do you have any more football thoughts? Big 12 or the game this Saturday?
No, I'm pretty good.
Okay.
I think you hit all the high points. So.
Well, let's transition real quick. TCU might have a basketball team. What's happening?
Yeah, it's I mean, maybe you guys have had a little bit more basketball success than us, obviously, in that you've had basketball success. Maybe you can help me kind of work
just
through this
a little bit. Not a lot.
Hey, you know, when that octagon was rocking in the good old days, it was pretty special. So it's a really weird thing. I think we all thought that Jamie Dixon had the ability to come in and make a difference. I don't think anybody expected that he would be able to do this much this quickly. And he brought in a couple 4-star point guards. We had a transfer. One of our two transfers from Texas A&M is really working out well. Alex Robinson's a point guard from A&M, sat out last year, and his, you know, is leading the team in scoring. Dropped 24 against a pretty decent Washington team last night to win, or Saturday night to win a championship of a tournament I don't know the name of. Gold Scorch Classic, that's the one. So. Okay. They've got some pieces. They've got a couple of really exciting young freshman players that can really light it up on the scoreboard. They play really good defense. They can play both man-to-man and zone effectively. They've got two really, really good inside guys and a lot of depth. So Dixon's made an instant impact. The much-revered Fran Fraschilla thought that TCU could go 7-11 in the Big 12 this year, and which would put them as a bubble tournament team, which would far exceed my expectations. But if they make the NIT, they win, you know, 5, 6, 7 games in the Big 12, this season will be an unmitigated success.
Yeah. And so you just beat Washington. I understand, like, the schedules are made far in advance. You don't know who's going to be in tournaments. But you play them again in 2 days, right?
Yeah.
How weird is that?
It's odd, but I think it's kind of a good, I'm glad we get another shot at them. You know, we kind of dominated from start to finish Saturday night, but in a game that was really controlled by the whistles, a lot of foul trouble, Markel Fultz fouled out. That was unfortunate, but I guess because I've been a college basketball or a basketball coach for so many years and I have a couple years in college, it's not that odd to me. And at the Division I level, it's much more different. You know, you don't see this happen a lot, but at the smaller schools and the high school level, it happens all the time. So I don't find it nearly as weird as most of the country does, but I'm excited to see Markel Fultz for a full 40 minutes and see what TCU can do against kid who's very likely the number one draft pick next year.
I mean, I know even some of these small D1 schools have such trouble scheduling people. They'll schedule home and home with non-conference opponents. I've seen that happen
before. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. So, you know, for TCU, like I said, we played in a tournament in Las Vegas at a weird time, streaming on Campus Insiders. So not a lot of people got to see those games. So I think that bringing Washington back to Fort Worth and to see a big-time Pac-12 program, even if it's a little bit down this year, at the Schollmeyer will be great for the fans. And seeing a talent like Markelle Fultz will be a lot of fun to watch in person.
And meanwhile, Kansas State was on the obscure American Sports Network.
Yes.
Beat up on Boston College and then came pretty close to beating Maryland, which, I mean, so I feel like they're off to a decent start. You know, last year they almost beat North Carolina. They got to, so that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I don't know. We'll see. I guess I have to ask now that you've got Dixon, Trent Johnson's gone, Travis Ford is gone. Is Bruce Weber the worst coach in the Big 12 at this point?
Ooh. I mean, we've got two really unproven guys, you know, at Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, who both may end up being great. And Oklahoma State is not an absolute tear to start the season. They look really
can
scary.
Can we not talk about Oklahoma State, actually? That's kind of a sore subject for us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Michelle and be a jerk. That's my bad. Who? Yeah, that other team. That team that wears an even uglier orange than Texas does. Oh, earn me some favor, right? Yeah, this conference is not getting worse, and as good as it was last year, I think there's an argument that it may be better this year. You know, I think Texas Tech is going to have a bit of a down year. Oklahoma lost a ton, but still has a ton of talent. Texas, year two, year three of the Shaka Smart era, should be pretty good, pretty tough. You know, if Kansas State is back to competing at a high level like they're capable of, then TCU is competent.
Yeah.
Iowa State looks like they've gotten off to a pretty solid start. There's just not going to be a lot of wins.
I hate to say it, but Baylor looks really good so far.
I feel dirty even talking about them. They do. They look really, really good again. So, I mean, who did they just beat? They came back on Louisville, right?
Yeah, they were down 20 in the second half of that game.
So that team is super, super scary, obviously. So it's going to be a really, really interesting conference season. And that's why I'm trying to temper my expectations for TCU this year. The talent could be there. They could be as good as we think they are and still go, you know, 4-14 in the Big 12 and it not be a failure. Just because where are you going to get your gimme wins? You know, there's just not going to be a lot of teams even on your home floor that they show up and you go, oh, we should win this game. Because there's just not a lot of weak spots in the conference this year.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting. We will see. Well, we are recording this on Sunday night and the Chiefs game has actually started, so.
Well, you guys, we got to probably time here, guys.
Probably time to wrap this up. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, Melissa, we really appreciate you coming on. So.
Yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I'm looking forward to a great game on Saturday. I just wish we didn't have that god-awful 11 a.m. kickoff time.
Yeah, three weeks in a row for us. And that's 9 a.m. for me. So.
It's our second week in a row at home for the 11 a.m. game, so it's a struggle.
Yeah. It is. Well, imagine you were on the West Coast, and it's 9 a.m.
Yeah, so. But you know what I will say?
Wake up to college football. That's cool.
Yeah, and I'm a California native, and so every time I'm home during football season, I always love waking up. Like, I watched the Kansas game at 9 a.m. with mimosas in San Francisco, and it was awesome. And then it was almost not awesome, and then it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, when that happens, do you worry that it's going to be karmic retribution for you guys beating KU in that weird basketball game?
You know, we keep waiting, and I thought 2014 was the year that was going to happen when we didn't take control of that game until Cam Eccles-Looper returned a punt really, really late in the fourth quarter to give us our first lead. And that 2014 team was a world beater, so the fact that they struggled always reminds me that it's just okay, and TCU is going to struggle against Kansas. So as long as we, you know, eke out with that one-point win, I can live with playing close games to Kansas every year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
okay. It's weird that it's Kansas. I just don't get it. But
it doesn't make sense. Don't try to imply logic to it because it will only hurt your brain. Trust me. I've been doing this for 5 years now, so it's just an annual tradition of, oh no, we almost lost to Kansas.
All right. Well, so Melissa, you know, people can read your stuff at Frogs of War. Do you have a Twitter as well?
Yep. At the Coach Melissa on the Twitter machine.
All right. Sounds good. And 00, well done. Maybe we'll have you back on again.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, thanks. Signing off. Talk to you guys.